we're basically almost ready.
But I'm going to make weird noises. I don't want this to be recorded.
I'm not
even
gonna,
if you cut them later, you're going to be listening to it and you're going to hear,
dude,
like,
you need to not.
You know what I mean?
Well, now, I mean, now I am. And trust me, CJ, now our listeners are too.
Great. It's fantastic. Welcome, everybody, to the first episode of the year 2020 Nerd Critic.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody. I realize that it's, you know, 10-ish days after the new year, but that feels appropriate to still say new year.
This is a new year.
2020.
And, yeah, I mean, 10 days in, it's still fresh.
Yeah.
It's still a pie on the windowsill. Like, I'm, you know.
What percentage of people are still sticking with their New Year's resolutions?
0%.
Zero.
First of all, we should probably introduce ourselves.
Sure,
like
we should.
Like,
yes.
As in that this is a podcast about movies from the dual perspective of critical nerdiness. While our logline is accurate, I wonder if it's actually snappy and interesting, and I think it might not be. So we're gonna maybe be thinking about changing the log line, the intro log line. I would love to get recommendations from our listeners.
Ooh, that's a good idea. That's a good idea.
Nerd Critic, fill in the blank.
We'll throw like a post up asking, and you'll be able to find it on Facebook and Instagram. And you can go to our social medias and add a comment that you think should be the log line.
Love to hear it. No promises.
Absolutely
not.
It
might come from a dream I had
it
instead.
It might. Most of your suggestions might be terrible. Probably will be.
Yeah. And
but if there's a gem in there,
most
we'll
of my
find
suggestions
it.
Are going to be awesome.
Yeah, naturally.
Yeah,
I did. Somebody brought to my attention that in some of our places online, we spelt duel as in fighting.
Like dueling. I blame you, CJ.
I kind of like that better.
Oh no. No, it's not good.
A dual perspective?
No, it's not good.
Your fighting perspective?
Yeah, no, but...
That's amazing! No,
well, it's a nice idea.
I like it.
It's grammatically...
I'm going to say it was on purpose.
It's not something...
I still don't know which one's which, if it's A or E.
Duel, E-L, is fighting.
Is fighting.
Duel, A-L, is two. Both.
I'm never going to remember that.
Yes, you will.
I don't know if I will. Remember when you gave me a book to read?
Several. I've given you several books to read.
You've given me several books to read.
You've read how
many
of them?
None of them.
How many words of them? 0 words. Did you open any of them?
Is one of them called The Third Door?
Yeah.
So 3 words.
3 words. The title.
Yes.
Okay.
But should I make a resolution to read more?
Just read. Make your 2020 resolution to read the first page. Of one of the books that I have given you.
Moving on. My name is CJ, your resident nerd.
And I am Jordan, your studied and credentialed critic. This is a podcast about movies, and we are going to be talking about movies today.
Multiple
movies today.
Yes, we are.
So this is our grand top 10 of 2019 episode. I want to do something interesting here, CJ. Are you ready for this?
I am.
Movies that overlap will receive our special Nerd Critic Award.
Oh, okay.
So any of the movies that are on your top 10 and are also on my top 10 will be candidates to receive the Nerd Critic Movie Award for 2019.
I'd be surprised if there's more than 3 that overlap.
Well, we're going to find out.
Yeah, we are.
This is going to be a lot of fun.
Here it goes.
So the way we've done this in the past is we just alternate. So one of us starts with 10, and then we go 10, 9, 8, and so on and so forth.
Okay.
That's what I think we should do again.
Sounds good. I need to make sure that it is understood that there are 3 movies that I haven't seen of 2019 that I am told are great that would likely make my top 10.
Only three.
I mean, there are some that are coming out currently or currently in the theaters, but there are 3 that, like, I am confident enough would make my top 10. Yeah, there's 2. Little Women, I have not seen, and I am, from what I hear about it, I'm pretty sure it would make my top 10. Parasite, which I also have heard wonderful things, and I assume it's going to be in my top 10. Still haven't seen it. Nor have I made the 3.5 hours of time to watch The Irishman.
Well,
so just know that if you're upset that those aren't on my list, it's because I haven't seen them yet. But if I see them and I love them, I'll make sure to tell everybody.
Okay.
That they're great.
Okay.
And we're going to do an episode definitely Little Women, probably Parasite, and probably The Irishman.
Yes. Yes, we will. And also just, CJ, I do want you to be embarrassed for not having seen some of those movies.
Listen.
It's gonna hurt our conversation today.
Are they all on your...
I'm not going to say that. I'm not gonna. What are you trying to do? You trying to spoil this entire thing?
I bet at least two of the three are. Jordan has seen. Jordan has a child.
Do you know what I'm doing right now?
Jordan has a child.
I am taking my coat off.
And has seen more movies in the theater than I have this year by a significant margin.
Over 70 movies this year.
I bet I'm between 50 and 60.
Yeah. AMC. So many. AMC A-list owes us money. I've actually hired a lawyer to draft a letter.
They owe us money?
Yeah. Yeah. Without them, this podcast wouldn't exist. And we talk about them like
that's true. We do. We promote them quite a bit.
I bet they have several.
You're getting your money's worth out of that.
I bet they have several hundred thousand new subscribers because of us. Anyway. Yeah. So
who do you want to start or do you want me to start?
I want. You know, I don't know. Should we flip a coin?
No, I'll start.
Okay.
Okay. Good talk.
All right.
So my number 10, with a close honorable mention, and I got to make sure to do the honorable mention because it went from like my most frustrating movie of the year up to number like 10 and a half, 11 because of you, and that's Joker.
Oh, yeah.
So it almost made it.
Oh, I'm happy.
But I watched a movie today. That bumped it.
Today.
Because I was told that I need to watch it before my top 10 conversation. So I squoze it in last minute.
Okay? Why have I never used the word squoze?
Is that because it's not a word? Squeezed?
Yeah.
No, squoze is a word. No, squoze not a word?
No.
Dang it!
But CJ, no, you shouldn't have said that. I thought for sure that it was something you were doing on purpose because
not
it's
even,
such a cool sounding word.
It should be a word. It makes perfect sense.
I do love it.
Have we talked about this before?
I love it more than the word squeezed. Squoze is a word that should...
Duel and Squoze in the same episode?
Well, I mean...
This isn't great. Happy 2020.
CJ, read more books. Listen, I do not judge you. I thought it was... So, for one, nobody needs to know how to spell anymore. There's no reason to know how to spell anymore.
I agree.
There literally is no reason. If you have children in school... Or you are in school. No, if you're listening to this podcast, you are not a child in school who is of the age that would be doing
spelling
exercises and tests. But if you have children or if you know children that are doing, you need to write letters of complaint about that. Because no children should be doing spelling quizzes anymore because the technology has surpassed.
It'll help us out.
There's just no reason.
It's fine.
You shouldn't need to know how to spell. And also, if someone knows what you mean when you say squoze...
It doesn't matter.
Squoze is a word.
It's fine. My mom says I'm smart. So this movie I saw right before coming here...
Wait a minute. Is it your number 10?
It's my number 10.
Oh, okay.
It squoze right in there. And that movie... and that movie is A Marriage Story.
Oh.
Yes.
This is actually... This is so interesting.
Okay.
This is so interesting.
What do we do if it's on your list? Do I just stop talking?
Well, no. Keep talking.
Okay.
We'll get to that.
Okay. So, A Marriage Story, the reason... Okay. So, there has been a lot of... So, this movie's on Netflix. Scarlett Johansson, Adam Driver, Laura Dern... and some others, and it is a movie about it. You just go through basically the divorce process, And I am pretty familiar with divorce, not that I've been divorced myself, but it is heavily around me. And I had, it hurt. This movie really, really hurt. But as I watched it, it gave me such a sobering realization that I need to try harder in my marriage. And it changed my reality around my parents and around my brothers, and like how the story might have changed or how the elements around them might have persuaded them to think a certain thing, and the hatred and the anger. It's just so, it was such a study that, and the reason it's on my list is because it affected my reality. It affected, forever changed my perspective on a significant thing in my life. And if a movie can do that, then it is successful in my book.
Yeah, that's great. I think Marriage Story was a fantastic movie. Written and directed by Baumbach? Is it Baumbach? I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Who is married to Greta Gerwig, who did Little Women.
Ah. Man, I'd love to have dinner with those two.
What a marriage.
Seriously.
So yeah, Marriage Story is a really, really good movie. So before I say anything about Marriage Story, I need to provide just a little bit of context for my list. This was the hardest I've ever worked to come up with a list of top 10. It was the most painful. It was the most frustrating. It was actually a fairly hellish experience for me.
Wow.
Because I saw so many movies and loved so many movies. And rather than trying to give you a really clear picture of the whole process of me coming up with this list, which wouldn't be interesting for you and it would be painful for me to relive, it was actually hours of my wife helping me by essentially giving me two movies and telling me to pick one over and over and over and over and over and over again. And yeah, it got harder and harder and harder. And I wanted to leave. I just wanted to go to sleep. It was so terrible.
I sat down on my computer and wrote it out.
Started with 30 movies.
Wow.
That I thought legitimately could be on my top 10 list. 30 movies. I had to whittle down.
That's what you get for seeing over 70 movies.
That was my, yeah, that was, the, this is, I, yeah, 2019 was the year that I feel like I more officially became a film critic. Where I saw so much and loved so much. And yeah, 30 movies. I thought, yeah, no, that could totally be in my top 10. Anyway, so this is what I have. I have a top 20.
Wow.
I'm not going to talk about each of them.
Okay, all right.
I'm not
okay.
going to do that.
Okay.
But I am going to – but when you mention one that's on my top 20, I'm going to tell you where it is on my top 20.
Okay, deal.
And at the end, when we've gone through our top 10, I'll mention the ones that I haven't mentioned yet. Okay. Just to say that they are on there.
Okay.
And the way that my top 20 looks to me is that it's kind of like I have a top 10 and then a second top 10 – that could easily just replace the first top 10.
They're all pretty.
They're all so good.
Yeah.
And Marriage Story is number 20.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll take it.
So that's why it feels weird to me that it's your number 10.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
it's kind of like also my number
sure.
10. On like my
it's
second
your 10A.
Top 10. Yeah, yeah. It's like 10A.
10B.
Yeah.
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 Nice. Okay. Anyway, so what's your number 10?
So my number 10 is A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What do we do if it's on my list?
Well,
we didn't talk about this.
I'll finish talking about it, and then you can tell me where it is on your list and talk about it, and then we'll skip over that number
okay.
when we get
all
to
right.
your
list. All right.
We'll keep it easy. We'll keep it easy. I'm also just making little notes here because we have not shared these lists with each other.
We have not.
We're this is fresh. This is fresh, everybody. Just like the year. Just like 2020. These are fresh lists. And actually, it was last night that I finished this list, and it kept me up till like 2 a.m. So
wow.
Anyway,
it's dedication,
okay,
man.
Here we go. A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. I loved so much. I cried so much. And I was sitting next to my mother because I saw it with her in the theater. which was a nice experience. It was nice. I'm not much of a crier. I tear up during movies when they're really good. There were so many tears. I had a very hard time not, like, just straight up crying through, like, half this movie. I think it is the perfect companion to the Mr. Rogers documentary that came out. And I also, amazingly, seemed so necessary.
Yeah.
Like, you watch the documentary and you're like, I have so much faith in humanity. And it's so beautiful and wonderful. And you just are so in love with the fact of him. And then you watch this movie and it's like this whole other thing. But it's this also the same brand and category of sentiment, which is faith in humanity restored. And also Tom Hanks is a genius.
Tom Hanks is absolutely a genius. A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood is my number 9.
Okay.
Actually.
All right.
So that works out. A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. So to give you context on how I saw it, I was at the theater. When I go visit my father, we have a tradition of going to the theater and just hitting like 3 or 4 movies. If there's 3 or 4 movies that we haven't seen or that I like enough to see again, we'll go see them back to back to back. Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood was the first one that we saw among our movie day. And this is one of the reasons why I loved it so much. So same reasons for you. Tom Hanks is a genius. It restored faith in humanity. As you're watching it, it just is getting all the happy tears out of you, all the meaningful tears out of you. But then at the end of this movie, because this movie is about one man and Mr. Rogers.
Matthew Reese, by the way, also a genius.
Amazing. And Mr. Rogers affecting this one man. And that effect then affects his relationship with his father and his relationship as a father to his son.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting next to my father when I watch this movie. So I watch it. I'm crying. I then talk to my dad about it. Did not even, and sorry, Dad, I guess we're getting real on your personal life, but.
Here we go.
So what I didn't put together when watching this movie was that my dad has a dad that left the family, which in the movie is the case with our main character. His dad left him.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even put together watching the movie, right? I'm all thinking about myself. It's all about me. And so I talked to my dad about it, and there's a very significant emotional moment that you're supposed to feel for the father. And my dad didn't feel that moment. He was like completely shut off and did not want to hear it, did not want to see it. And I put together that it's because of his relationship with his father that made him like put up a guard against that moment. So the conversation I had with my dad after watching this movie was so interesting and taught me so much about how the individual's emotional state and what the individual audience member brings into the movie is going to greatly affect how they experience the movie. And it was so beautiful to me, and it was somewhat stone and a void of emotion for him. And it was so, it's inspired such a beautiful conversation between the two of us afterwards. It had to be on my list.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
What movie can do that? It just the fact that movie got my dad and I to have the conversation that we did is just incredible.
We're going to be doing an episode on that one as well soon. So look forward to even more conversation about it. I truly loved A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. So that was your number 9, which means
it's now your turn.
Time for my number 9. My number 9 was, I'm actually not sure if this movie was on your list or not.
Okay.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood made it to my top 10. Also, one more disclaimer about my top 10. It's all bullcrap. It could change.
It could be in any order.
Yeah, the order.
These are just 10
the
movies.
The order just, I mean, I did my best.
Sure.
But my best was despairing 2 a.m. me, and who knows.
I think you're going to be surprised.
It is on your list.
It is on my
list. Oh, good. You know, no, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. We loved this movie.
We did love
it. It was one of our better episodes in 2019, and I'm pleased and not surprised that it's on your list.
This movie got better the longer, the more distance I had from watching it.
Yeah.
And the more I found myself thinking about it.
Have you gone back to it again? to see it a second time?
I don't. I think I only saw it once.
I did. I actually.
You saw it twice,
yeah. which gives the movie a bit of an unfair advantage.
Sure, I'm sure. I'm sure it does. But like, how often? Because this movie was what, early summer, kind of spring.
Yeah.
I've thought about this movie so many times.
Yeah. It's a sticky movie.
It is very sticky. And the more I think about it, the more I like it.
Yeah.
So it is snuck up. I think it started at like 8. It is actually snuck up. And is my
number one.
Is my number 5.
Number 5.
Yeah.
Very
it's my number
nice.
5.
All right. Well, what is your number 8, good sir?
So if you're wondering why we're not talking about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, it's because we did an entire episode.
We did an entire episode.
So go back and listen to it. Because it's a good episode.
Yeah, we're not going
to
talk
about it. We're not going to go into detail.
Oh, well, just highlights. Quentin Tarantino's best movie.
Agreed.
The movie in which Quentin Tarantino becomes sort of Coen Brothers-esque, and it like works really well. Like really, really well. And
some of the best performances from
some of the best performances
Leo
from those
and
actors
Brad that we've seen.
Ever? Just absolutely, just so much pleasure, and also one of the sweetest stories in any Quentin Tarantino movie, and honestly, in any movie this year, just in terms of its humanness, its philanthropy, its love of humanity.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful movie.
With an ending that, talk about a sticky ending.
Yeah.
That's. Okay, so we're at my number
8.
8.
Mm-hmm.
This one I almost guarantee is not on your list. It might be in your 20.
Let's hear it.
But I'd be surprised if it was.
Okay.
Where'd you go, Bernadette?
Where'd you go, Bernadette? Actually, this one didn't make it.
Didn't make it. I'd be surprised.
I did really like this movie, but let's hear how it made it on your list.
So we did an episode on this movie as well. But Where'd You Go, Bernadette? For me was one. It was a movie that challenged me in my personal life and like my relationship with my wife, and then it made me kind of rethink what happiness means and what fulfillment in life means. This is another movie that the longer I go having not seen it, the more I think about it and the more impact it has on my life. So if I see a movie and it has like the things that it taught me or got me to think about makes me do something, like the actions in my life are different because I saw the movie, then that's a successful movie. Where'd You Go, Bernadette? There may be one other one, but might be the movie that affected my decision making through the rest of the year, probably the most.
Cool.
About like accomplishing your dreams and all of that. So
that's great.
I really like that movie.
That's great. I think it's a really great movie. The reason that it didn't make it out of my top 20 is I think that without Cate Blanchett, it would have been a failure.
Sure. I can agree with that.
But Cate Blanchett is amazing. So it was not a failure. It was actually pretty awesome. Cool. My number 8 was, and once again, I feel like I wouldn't be surprised if this was on your list. Jojo Rabbit.
Jojo Rabbit is my number 7.
Okay. All right. Well, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't even do a podcast together. I feel like there's nothing to talk about because we just
did. Do we talk about dual perspectives? I'm not sure. That's the case.
It's maybe just mono perspective. So Jojo Rabbit is Taika Waititi being wonderful by showing us a little boy whose imaginary best friend is Hitler. And honestly, there are a few movies this year that I found as delightful, to use a nerd critic favorite word.
Yes.
As Jojo Rabbit, I felt like there was so much success in comedy and tragedy in this movie. I really, really loved it. We didn't do an episode on Jojo Rabbit, did we?
We did not.
We talked about it in our top 5.
Yeah.
Quote unquote underrated. At one point we might like to. It was just so lovely.
Yeah.
And to see somebody like Taika Waititi being able to put a movie like that together, which was so fresh and so unique and inventive and and beautiful in so many ways. Up to Marriage Story, it was my favorite Scarlett Johansson performance. Possibly even after Marriage Story, it's my favorite Scarlett Johansson performance. And that little freaking boy, man.
Wow.
Just
yeah, absolutely amazing.
What a guy.
So if you want if somebody's like, who's Taika Waititi? This might be the movie that I'm like, you want to learn what this guy can do? If you want to see what this director this is made movie. Of, go watch Jojo Rabbit. Because the first half of the movie, you're going to laugh. You're going to be uncomfortable when you laugh, which is something he's great at. Yep. It's like, ha ha, Hitler. Wait, no. And so it's a kind of an uneasy, should I be laughing at this? But you do because it's great. And then there's quite a significant tone shift and it becomes a real movie talking about real things and it's real dramatic.
Yeah.
But it doesn't betray you. It's not like, oh, this is two separate movies. It's not like that at all. It just, it is a movie with a purpose while still being a whole lot of fun. And the premise is a lot of fun. So I think Taika Waititi in this movie specifically was showing his range and his genuine genius.
Yeah. And he plays Hitler. Yeah.
And he's hilarious. Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
It's really, really quite wonderful. So that was my number eight. What was your number eight? Because now we know what your number seven was.
No, you got my number eight. Where did you go, Bernadette?
Oh, that's right.
So now you're doing your number seven.
Now I'm doing my number seven because yours was Jojo Rabbit.
Correct.
My number seven actually surprised me. And this one actually fought for like a higher spot on the list too. Like it fought pretty hard. Like, we're getting into like really rough territory here for me,
sure.
Where these are all like number one contenders. Like from here on up are like number one contenders. My top seven are all basically tied for number one. So it's actually El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie.
Wow. Okay.
It was a Netflix original, produced by Netflix, released on Netflix. I don't believe it got a theatrical release. I do not believe it will be in the Oscar running. It's kind of a fan service movie, but let me tell you, CJ, if you are a fan of Breaking Bad, this movie is for you. It is just wonderful. Jesse Pinkman, played by Aaron Paul, was always my favorite character in Breaking Bad, and this is so much. I mean, it's his movie is self-evident because he's very obviously the main character, but insofar as it feels like Breaking Bad if Breaking Bad was Jesse Pinkman's story. And it is so wonderful. It is so, so heartfelt. It has all of the perfect, like, detailed humor of the Breaking Bad sort of that what Breaking Bad is as a thing, what you think of and how it kind of hits you. It does all those great things. But also has like a different brand and flavor because it is this essentially way better perspective. And it has, I think, one of the most satisfying endings to any movie just because obviously it was built as essentially an epilogue to the entire Breaking Bad show. So the end of the movie is not only a perfect ending to the movie, but it is also a wonderful ending for this character that you spent five seasons growing to love back when Breaking Bad was in its heyday.
Mm.
So it was awesome and I loved it. And I found myself thinking about and dreaming about the last shot for weeks after I finished watching it. It was an absolutely beautiful movie.
One of your biggest strengths in being in the entertainment industry is your ability to keep up with television. One of my biggest weaknesses is my lack of ability to keep up with television.
Let me tell you, CJ.
Breaking Bad.
It's much easier to watch TV than it is to write.
So what you're saying is your ability to keep up on television is actually your ability to procrastinate writing?
Yes.
Got it.
That is, those two things are the same. They are equivalent.
I have not seen that movie because I have not finished Breaking Bad.
Okay.
And so that's, I wish I could contribute to the conversation.
2020 resolutions.
There you go.
We can move on, but I just want to, like I said, it was a movie that I loved enough that it's like fighting on my top 10 list,
which is
amazing to
which
me.
Which is, very impressive. Yeah. All right. So my number six,
uh-huh.
not to sound like a broken record following you, but this one surprised me. This one, it started at number 15. And as I was like, it's better than this one. It's better than that one. It's better than this one. Made it all the way up to my number 6. We've talked about it before. It is the movie Late Night.
Late Night.
Whoa.
Oh,
my watch decided to talk to me.
Your watch wants to be part of the conversation.
It does.
You know, it's asked to be on the podcast before and we've turned it down.
It's just, I don't think it's very
honestly,
charismatic.
I don't think that this helps its case.
I agree.
I feel it's just rude.
Show some personality when you talk. Yeah. You know, it's so robotic.
Honestly, have a little bit of respect. Like, we invite you into the room and you're just going to interrupt CJ in
how
the middle
rude.
Of a thought.
I
yeah,
know.
Sorry. It's not going to happen.
Jeez. So Late Night.
Yeah.
So this movie, we've talked about it before, but it was a surprise for me. I watched it on Amazon. It was like one night I was with my wife and we're like, what should we watch? And she loves Mindy Kaling.
Kaling. I think so.
It's a G?
I believe so.
Well, Kaling. Okay. All right. Mindy from the Mindy Project.
Mindy from the Mindy Project.
And so we're like, sure. So we throw it on and she's doing 800 things while she's watching the movie because she's that kind of person. And I was supposed to be folding clothes. Couldn't do it. I was so sucked into that movie and I was so invested in the characters and it was like, and this ability to bring up a lot of hot topics in Hollywood without preaching was amazing. The writing was great. I have just such high respect for Mindy and for this movie, and Emma Thompson's acting was phenomenal. And I just, the more I think about this movie, the more I love it. And so, yeah, it's my number 6. That's respectable
for
the
year. That's pretty great.
Yeah.
First of all, I was wrong. It's Kaling.
It is Kaling.
I'm an idiot.
Okay.
I think I've always said Kaling, and
it's embarrassing.
I'm embarrassed. I will see myself out.
I mean, what's worse? Squoze, Kaling, you know. Probably Squoze.
Probably Kaling. probably actually just being offensively wrong about somebody's name is worse than just choosing the wrong past tense of a word. Anyway.
It's the making up of a past tense of a word. Anyway.
It's creativity, CJ.
Anyway.
Anyway,
I'm assuming Late Night is in your top 20 at least.
It is in my top 20.
Sure.
And it's one, this is why I keep calling my 11 through 20 my sort of dark horse top 10, because like I was sure Late Night was going to be in my top 10.
Yeah.
I loved Late Night. It was my favorite Emma Thompson performance I think ever.
Wow.
I loved her so much. Her every big long thing that she did in that movie, the stand-up stuff,
the speeches so
in front of a writer's room, the speeches in front of her, just her dynamo performances in every scene of that movie just absolutely wrecked me. I loved her. And I thought all the same things you did. I was just so impressed with how timely it felt in a totally non-preachy way. You know, you and I were talking earlier about political echo chambers, and I feel like this is a movie that successfully broke out of the chamber.
Yes, yes.
Which is awesome. Anyway, it was my number 18.
Okay, all right.
All right, so my number 6 was Fighting With My Family.
Wow! That if I made a top 20, no question,
yeah,
that would be on there.
But number six. I loved it so much.
Guys, this is a movie that is produced by the WWE. Okay? That's what's happening right now.
Hey, this is a movie that was written and directed by Stephen Merchant.
Yeah.
Who I think is a genius.
I just avoid that fact.
Stephen Merchant is a tall, gangly genius.
So he made 2 appearances on your list. He's in Jojo Rabbit.
He also is in Jojo Rabbit in one of my favorite scenes
Absolutely
of Jojo Rabbit.
Amazing.
My gosh, Stephen Merchant is an SS officer. No spoilers, I guess, but some spoilers. But my gosh, I love that man. Fighting With My Family. I keep calling this one of those movies that if you're trying to write a movie that is just classically good narrative, where you have a protagonist who want something, and then they try to get it, and then they grow, and then by the end they get it or they don't get it, and things have happened to their character. Like, just the most traditional sort of act one, two, three.
Totally.
Like, such an incredibly traditional script and story, but so perfectly executed that you realize you can do that forever.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. If you pick a really good subject and really good characters and you dive deep into the details of your world, because I didn't know anything about that world. I knew nothing about that world. And I was given entry into that world through this movie, through a very traditional story with very well-written characters and like surprising and fresh conflicts that drew those characters through their arcs so that the decisions that they made mattered and revealed interesting things, not only about the world and their characters, but like the sort of universal human stuff that you look for in good storytelling. And it was beautiful. And by the end, it was transportive. I mean, it was such an incredibly satisfying movie on almost every level. And nothing about that movie was trying to break any like storytelling rules. It was just like doing story right.
And if you
loved it for it.
And if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, I don't know. So you go onto YouTube and you type it in and you watch a trailer. That trailer is going to make you think, oh, this movie's going to be terrible. Because that's what I thought. And I was like, produced by the WWE. It has a cameo from The Rock. It has Vince Vaughn as a WWE coach.
It's a mediocre trailer.
All the ingredients and the past tells us that this movie shouldn't be good.
Yeah.
That most likely it's going to be a very mediocre movie for a very small niche group of people. Not the case.
Everyone should see this movie.
It's fantastic. And you talk about the writing of the character, but the supporting character specifically might be my favorite Vince Vaughn performance ever.
So, I mean, we shouldn't spend too much time here, but I agree with you. Vince Vaughn, my favorite Vince Vaughn performance.
Amazing.
I think easily.
Amazing.
I like Vince Vaughn I've loved him in some things, but like in this movie, he was just magical.
Yeah.
Florence Pugh, I'd never seen her in anything before. She entered the world for me in this movie, and I was blown away.
She was
so good.
Yeah.
The actor who played her brother, amazing. Like, her parents,
hilarious.
I loved everything about this movie.
Yeah.
And like, it was. I even loved the way that in the best storytelling, the most sophisticated storytelling, there are no villains. And there were no villains in this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
The
people that they kind of geared up to be the villain, you end up being friends with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
So loved.
Loved it.
Loved Fighting With Family.
So
number six.
My number five is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. We already talked about it. What's your number five?
Ah, yes. But also, what was Fighting With Your... Sorry. Did Fighting With My Family make it onto your
top
20?
Not my top 10. It'd be on my top 20.
You didn't make it top 20. Sorry. Yeah. Earlier you were talking about like number 15. I thought maybe you had like a secret. No, it's fine. It's fine. I'm OCD. It's fine. it's possible this one will surprise you that maybe it's not higher. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. Knives Out.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow, number five.
Wow,
it's that low.
That low. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Knives Out. I love Rian Johnson. I love this movie. I have literally not one negative thing to say about this movie. From here on out, there aren't problems with the movies that I'm talking about. And in fact, I would probably even say that with Fighting with My Family. There's not a problem with Fighting With My Family. Maybe in any of the top 10. I don't think there are any problems in any of the movies in the top 10. This is why it was so freaking hard.
Yeah, yeah,
usually
yeah.
I can be like, well, there was this little thing that kind of bugged me. So like, I'll just bump it down the list a little bit. No, that didn't happen. Yeah, Knives Out is fantastic.
Yeah, we did a Knives Out episode.
Yeah, and you should go listen to it because it's great.
My Knives Out, or Knives Out for me was number 3.
Ooh, boy, this is great.
Knives Out for me was one that anybody can see it. Everybody loves it. They have a good time. They follow it. And you can see it multiple times and pick up new things every time.
Yep.
Like, it is the movie. It is just, when you're like, I want to see a movie, Knives Out should always be an option. It doesn't matter who you're with. Doesn't matter how many times you've seen it. It should always be an option.
Yeah.
It's just good in every way.
Yeah.
In every way.
Yeah.
So it's my number three.
I'm
it's
not.
Your number five. I'm so curious what one through four are. All right.
I'm not. I'm looking at them right now.
My number four.
I'm so curious.
It won't surprise you. I've talked about it quite a bit. And that is the Peanut Butter Falcon.
Okay.
Yeah. The Peanut Butter Falcon for me, this is a movie. I've talked about it before. It is Shia LaBeouf, who is on a journey with a dude with Down syndrome. And he learns a lot about himself and about the world and about his perspective on life. And it just was so yummy. This whole movie was so yummy. It's a very, very similar to A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, where I just, my faith in humanity was restored. I wanted to share it with everybody. And I just, I cannot recommend The Peanut Butter Falcon anymore. When I talked about Where'd You Go, Bernadette, in a movie that affects my decision-making, where Peanut Butter Falcon might be the other one that has affected the way that I treat people. Probably more than any other movie. Not ever, but it's up there.
I love The Peanut Butter Falcon. I finally saw it very recently. And it is my number 19, actually.
Oh, okay. So we got 20, 19, and 18.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did love The Peanut Butter Falcon. It didn't have a fair audience for me, because I saw it in two parts. I had to like watch part of it and then watch the other part of it. For a little bit of it, my son was awake and playing around, so it was a little bit of the little distraction there. So there was a few missing pieces for me for The Peanut Butter Falcon. I think that that's one of those movies that was overhyped a little bit. Somebody whose opinion I respect a lot, like, could not say enough good about it. Was just like,
was it me?
No, it was. I mean, you did talk it up quite highly, and I do respect your opinion. But there was somebody else I know actually talked about how it was like one of their favorite movies and like the movie that they wish that they'd written. And I was like, oh my gosh!
Wow!
Yeah, so yeah. It was like one of those like really. And I get it. Like after watching it, I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense. That totally makes sense. And it's a fantastic movie. I think I need to see it again. Also, Shia LaBeouf had a big year.
He did.
Honey Boy was my 17.
Oh, wow.
I
didn't see Honey Boy.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Shia LaBeouf is fantastic. Peanut Butter Falcon is awesome. I think that if it had had a better shot for me and a better circumstance for me seeing it, I think it would probably be higher on my list. But
yeah, I mean, my context was I was in my apartment by myself, lights off, totally indulging in it, and I had I saw its Rotten Tomatoes score, and I was like, oh, cool, I want to see that. Yeah. And that was it.
That was it.
That was it.
Yeah.
So it was quite the delight.
That's awesome. I love those kinds of experiences. Very cool.
All right. Give me your number four.
My number four is Parasite, which you have not seen.
Again, surprised it's that low. I was expecting it to be your like number one or so.
So this is a weird thing. I don't want to spoil anything, but I think there are reasons for this. But yeah, Parasite.
Are we going to need to cover Parasite?
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
If it gets nominated for Best Picture, we'll cover it.
Yeah, yeah. This is a spiritual conversation for Nerd Critic, and we're going to have part of this conversation today, and then we'll continue the conversation later about what Nerd Critic is for and what we do, and why we do it, and how hard it is to do.
Yeah.
Guys, we joke around a lot, and we love doing what we do, and this is really fun, but it's also hard as hell. and we're going to talk a little bit about why it's so freaking hard. And Parasite is one of the reasons it's so hard.
Yeah.
Because if there was any justice in the world, we would have done an episode on it already. But you haven't even seen it.
No.
Because it turns out to be really, really challenging to see all the biggest movies and the best movies.
And the best movies, yeah.
So
not only that, but the opportunity to see the best movies is much.
Yeah, it's like the more
majority,
limited.
The majority of our listeners probably have had a very small window.
Or no window at all
to see Parasite.
Yes. Yeah. And which is a real shame, because Bong Joon-ho is one of the best filmmakers working today, bar none. And this movie is superb. It is so good. It is so like crushingly good. Like it will I'm left somewhat speechless. I haven't prepared to talk about Parasite.
Yeah.
I've talked about it a lot with friends and family. I don't know how to sum it up because it's doing so much and so successfully. It's funny. It's horrifying. It is like deeply thought-provoking. It is tragic. It is beautiful. It is all of these things.
Yeah.
And somehow still small. And it's so focused on such a small thing. And he just knows how to make a movie.
Yeah.
Like this guy is so good. Anyway, so Parasite is amazing. It's my favorite, I think, that I've seen of his. I haven't seen Okja, but I have seen Snowpiercer. I have seen The Host. And he is now internationally renowned. Bong Joon-ho is like the one Korean filmmaker that like everybody knows now. I feel like it's well deserved.
The Oscars.
Yeah, it's well deserved.
So what is your? So my number three was Knives Out. What's your number three?
My number three was A Hidden Life by Terrence Malick.
Wow.
Yeah.
You like Terrence Malick?
I do, but I'm not a proper fan of Terrence Malick because Tree of Life is a big deal movie for me. I really love Tree of Life. And because of Tree of Life, I really love Terrence Malick, but I haven't seen a lot of Terrence Malick movies. So I'm not a person who can kind of like rank Terrence Malick movies or say like, oh yeah, this is totally, I mean, for one, all of his movies are very similar in style. Like he's very much, if you want to like,
is A Hidden Life very similar in that kind of.
It's not similar structurally, but it's similar in the way that it's composed.
Got it.
It's still poetic cinema. It's still sort of like, it still does this thing. I mean, what you get the sense of when you watch a Terrence Malick movie is that he went out and shot stuff for like a year and then just spent another 3 years editing. Like that's what all of his movies feel like, is that he just got ridiculously beautiful shots, some of which have dialogue, incidentally. And then he just edited them together into a story. and so Hidden Life, I don't know whether we'll do an episode on it, but I will say this about it. It's 3 hours, and it's 3 hours of movie about something that you understand from the preview. So it's not something that's going to, it's not revealing anything to you that is surprising. Like it is very much like one idea reiterated in 1,000 images. But the idea is so important and so lovely and so profound and so hard to really get into your body that I think you need 3 hours to just feel that idea for the whole time. And it is an exquisite film. And for nothing else, you can go and just like, kind of drool over like ridiculously gorgeous cinematography capturing Austria. Like that's it. Like that's the price of admission.
Ticket. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you are also happening to, I think it is easily the holiest movie of the year in terms of like just Terrence Malick seems to be unafraid to explore spirituality in cinema. And there are very few directors who are doing that.
Yeah.
So it's a profoundly good movie.
It's cool.
Anyway.
I had really no desire to check that movie out.
I understand that.
But now I do.
Well, you hated Tree of Life.
I did. I was going to try and say, maybe I need to give it another shot. But I don't know if I want to. Okay.
I do think that you would have an easier time with A Hidden Life than Tree of Life.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The life thing threw me off. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Okay, my number two.
Your number two
is a movie I saw very recently.
I know what it is.
Sitting next to you.
I also know what your number one is now.
I'd be surprised if,
spoiler alert,
anybody that's listening doesn't know what it is.
Everybody now knows what your number one is. So, actually, I don't know if they know because maybe they think your number two is what you're about to say.
No.
Maybe that's what they're thinking.
My number two was a movie that I saw sitting next to you yesterday, 1917. So Jordan texts me, and on the day that we usually record, he texts me and says, I got screeners for 1917 and a Q&A with one of the writers afterwards. I think we should go. And I'm like, okay, cool. I need to see that movie anyway because we're going to cover it. So sure, I'll go. And I go, and I expected it to be good. And I sit down, and about 20 minutes go by, and I think to myself, wait, have I seen a single edit? And from that moment on, I mean, it was way before then, I was at World War I. I felt like I was there. This movie, oh, is such a movie. This movie is so good. The decisions that they decided to make in the story, it's so real. Like, the tension is so real, and it's not artificial. It's not like you stop or things go in slow motion, or it's like a nail biter of like what's going to happen. It's just like, if it's going to happen, it just happens, which makes it terribly intense because anything could happen at any point. And so you're just on the edge of your seat, just praying that these two guys make it from point A to point B, and you're just, it was so good. 1917 was so freaking good.
I was blown away by this movie. I was blown away by this movie. So the screenwriter after it was Christy Wilson Cairns, who is this lovely Scottish woman from Glasgow.
I mean,
with the accent and everything.
Red hair, glasses, I mean, freckles, everything.
As Scottish as it gets. Yeah. And also as freaking charming and clever as it gets, yeah, too. Yeah. Just like one of the best Q&As I've been to in a long time. This woman was every inch the writer and like understood deeply how this stuff worked. It's like was able to shed light on the intentionality of this film and like how every single, I mean, the difficulty of doing a movie like this.
I don't understand it.
Sam Mendes is one of the coolest directors in the world. And he used all of his genius to make this movie work.
Yeah.
Along with a really brilliant screenwriting co-writer and Roger Deakins.
Yeah.
Who I didn't realize had done the cinematography until the end credits. And I was like, oh, well, duh. Yeah. No wonder it was so exquisitely beautiful the whole time.
I mean, Gravity, the movie Gravity, the cinematography was so in your face that it was kind of like a theme park of cinematography. It's like, woo, yeah, yeah. This is so cool.
Yeah.
This movie was equally as incredible, if not more so.
More so.
But just gorgeous. While still being an action war movie.
Yeah.
Like, how do you do that?
I had known going in that they, I had found out somebody had, I don't remember how, but I had found out that it was it was composed to look like a one shot. No one claimed that it was a one shot.
Yeah.
It was just composed to look like a one shot, which means they hid the edits really, really well. And there aren't very many of them.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of long takes that are stitched together very seamlessly at relatively obvious moments. But the purpose is brilliantly maintained, which is that you don't ever feel the break. You never feel like there's an edit.
You never get a breath.
No.
You never catch a breath.
So
where is it on your list?
It's number one.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Wow. Dude.
Yeah. And that's the thing. So I did not, it feels maybe a little unfair because I just saw it so recently, but it was one of the it was probably the most powerful experience I had in a theater this year. So like it feels fair.
Yeah. It was also
I saw it in 2020 and it doesn't get a wide release until 2020. So it also feels kind of like it's cheating, but it is a 2019 movie. Yeah. So
you and I've seen several movies together.
Yes.
I have never, I've never seen an audience like there's the big blockbuster movies where people are clapping and cheering.
Yeah.
And then maybe like A Quiet Place had like a small percentage of the audience reaction. But I don't think I have ever heard so many people be so tense and uncomfortable all together. It was one of the most communal.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm so glad. I'm so glad that I was with it. Other than the people just going to town on their candy bag behind us, I'm glad I was with who I was with, because it was a movie that from the first like they open their eyes and you are in it,
yeah,
and you feel every second of it in like the best way possible,
yeah,
yeah. It's your number one.
It's my number one. It surprised me a little bit, but I kept going back to we're going to do an episode about it. And basically for when it gets its wide release, we're going to be doing an episode about it, which I'm really excited for.
Wait a second. Is your number two my number one?
We'll get there.
Okay.
But
I'm actually going to be upset if it's not.
We'll get there.
Okay. All right.
but yeah, so 1917 is I earnestly hope it wins Best Picture. Like I think that it could.
I think it could.
And I do believe that because there's so much. This is the last thing I want to say. It is successful on every level.
Yeah.
As a film, it is. I want to say even beyond because like so sometimes it can feel gimmicky like. The idea of this thing is that it's a World War I movie that's a one-shot, which could be a gimmick,
but
it's not. And it is such an incredibly well-constructed story. It is so deeply meaningful. It is so sophisticated in the way that it communicates the ideas and the themes and the textures that it wants to get across. Its objectives. It hits all of its objectives, and it does something that I've never seen a movie do before. And that, all together, to me, sort of qualifies it to be, like, not only was it one of the more powerful movie experiences I had in a theater all year, but also I think it is one of the most impressive cinematic achievements of 2019. That's how I feel about 1917.
So I put one note next to every one of these, one of my top 10. You want to hear the note I put for 1917?
Love it.
One of the best experiences I have ever had in a theater.
There you go.
So,
yeah.
AKA, I agree with you, Jordan. That's what I'm trying to say.
That's awesome.
All right, what's your number two?
So my number two.
I'm like nervous.
Is Little Women.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wait, it didn't make your talk. It's fine. It's fine. Tell me about Little Women. I don't know how it didn't make your top 10. It's in your top 20.
I knew you were going to be upset with me.
Is it 11 or 12?
We're not talking about it yet.
Tell me about Little Women, blah, blah, blah.
Little Women is amazing.
I haven't
seen it yet.
And Little... I'm almost guarantee it would be at the top of my top 10 because I'm like all about, I'll get so into that.
Little Women is a remarkably good movie. Greta Gerwig is so good. She's such a good writer. She does things. So, and this is actually, my wife pointed out one thing about Little Women, and we're going to do an episode about Little Women as well. So I won't get too far into it. But she pointed out one thing that she wished had been done a little bit differently that I kind of agree with her about. Even so, it's so powerful and so good and so just... I should prepare more when I'm trying to do quick summaries of these movies. I didn't. And you can tell. Everyone can tell. It's fine.
I mean, I wasn't thinking it.
But it's so good. It's so good. It really is. It's so lovely and it's so important. And I listened to an interview. It helped that I listened to a non-spoilery interview with Greta Gerwig like a week or two before I saw the movie. And she talked about some of the things that she tried to do. And so I became aware of those constructs, how she was essentially navigating the two different time periods that the movie covers. It's like 7 years apart. Like, there's basically two stories that are sort of cut in parallel, and the way that time kind of affects itself. So the way the future affects the past and the past affects the future, which we've talked about in, as we've talked about other movies, and Nolan is a big fan of this thing too. But she had a perspective for this movie that is so good and important and beautiful, and it was cast so wonderfully. Florence Pugh, once again, just knocking it out of the park. Mm. And then Saoirse Ronan being like, at this point, she's like the next freaking Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
Like, she could do anything.
Yeah.
And it is. It's so good. It's like, it's the movie that Little Women always, like, it's the movie that that book deserved.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Finally, we have, like, the right adaptation of Little Women. It's wonderful.
That's great. Yeah, I'll watch it and we'll talk about it.
Cool.
Okay, can we
move
on? So,
what was your number one?
Where is it on yours? All right, so my number one. I have a hard time. I have a hard time when I make these lists.
Was Captain Marvel.
I have a hard time when I make these lists where there's just a giant nerd, a big fanboy inside of me that it just obviously superhero movies. But like, we were talking about Hobbs and Shaw, right? And I was like, no, Hobbs and Shaw was fun. And you're like, I expected it to be funner, and I was like, no, I kind of had a good time. And like Transformers and like all these big, dumb movies, I just can't help but kind of like. And so when I make these lists, I try and kind of stifle that part of my fanboyness.
You shouldn't.
But here's the deal.
You shouldn't.
Here's the deal. I am confident that I will never feel the feelings that I felt when Captain America caught that hammer. That's a feeling I want to capture in a ball. I will never feel that again. At least that's what I thought when I was in the moment. And then I hear on your left, and the portals start to open, and I start to cry. And you see Black Panther walk through. And then one by one, every single hero gets their moment. And then there's a giant battle between the Avengers, and we finally get to hear him say, "Avengers assemble," and they fight, and it was everything you wanted it to be. I will never have that experience again in my life. I'm going to try so hard to recreate that experience for my children, but I just don't know if it'll happen. It was so good. It was so satisfying, and I have watched it way too many times. My number one for the year is Avengers Endgame. And there's
as
no question.
It should be,
there's
CJ.
No
and
question.
That, folks, is why CJ is the nerd and I am the critic.
Where is it on your list? It's not in the
number
top
47. I'm just kidding. No. It's actually you listen, it's number 13. It's not far.
Okay.
It's
all
not
right.
far.
Okay.
Okay.
What are 11 and 12?
Number 13. Number 11. So let's just, I'm just going to go backwards
okay.
now.
Okay.
So
okay.
we're going to go
11 to
11
20.
To 20. Okay. All right. Number 11. After, as a reminder, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood was number 10. Number 11, Toy Story 4.
Okay. Better than Avengers Endgame? It's fine. Keep going. What's number 12?
Number 12, Booksmart, which, as you know, I adored.
Yeah, Booksmart is, it would be probably my 12 or 13.
Okay.
Yeah.
13, Avengers Endgame.
Right.
14, Uncut Gems.
Okay.
Which you,
all right.
Well, we'll talk about it later.
Yeah.
15, Rocket Man.
Okay.
16, John Wick 3.
Yeah, sure.
Which, all of these movies.
All great.
All of them, yeah. I was surprised and dismayed
yeah.
that they were not on my top 10.
Yeah.
I believed that Avengers yeah. Endgame would be on my top 10.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, Avengers
obviously.
Endgame will be on my top 10.
Yeah.
17, Honey Boy. With Shia
yeah,
LaBeouf.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then
yeah.
and then 18, 19, and 20 we've discussed. Late Night 18, Peanut Butter Falcon 19.
Okay.
Marriage Story number 20.
Okay. All right. Yeah, there's definitely
CJ,
some
CJ. Guess what didn't end up on my top 20? Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, I'm glad. We would have had some words if Rise of Skywalker made it on your top 20.
Well, CJ, here's the thing. All the emotional experiences, this is actually hard for me to talk about. Because all the emotional experiences you had with Marvel,
yeah,
I deserved with Rise of Skywalker and didn't get.
Totally.
I got some of them. I got some of them.
Probably more so.
I was more, meaning I deserved them more so.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I think that Rise of Skywalker deserved to be at least as good of or better of a movie than Avengers Endgame.
And
it was 30 years in the making.
Culturally, it had the buildup to,
40,
to be so.
40 years in the making.
Yeah.
And so it had it had so many people like me. And there were moments in Rise of Skywalker that were deeply emotional for me. And we talked about it.
Yeah.
And in fact, you mentioned to me, CJ, that you've gotten some feedback from some of our listeners that they think that we were perhaps too gentle with Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah.
And that we didn't criticize it maybe to the degree that it deserves criticism. I will say that I don't think that I'm prepared to do that criticism. Not because I liked it and I'm trying to defend it, but because it's frankly too painful for me.
Sure.
Like Rise of Skywalker didn't even really compete for my top 20 because every time it came up in comparison with another movie,
there was
pain with Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah,
there were moments that I loved so much,
but
it didn't matter because it was such a deeply painful movie on like a sort of subconscious level.
Yeah.
Like that I even was that I tried to leave at the door even when I went into the theater.
Yeah, the only thing and it is comparable, though I think that your situation is much worse, but having grown up with Superman as an icon and then seeing Batman versus Superman.
Oh yeah, no, that is comparable. That absolutely is comparable.
Cuz it was
you told me you cried.
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, no question.
The only reason I didn't cry is because I knew it was coming.
Yeah.
If I had gone in to Rise of Skywalker not knowing what was coming and let's just say for the sake of argument that Rian Johnson had written and directed. Same exact movie. Everything exactly the same, but Rian Johnson had written and directed it, and so I went into it with all the expectations that it was going to be the proper follow-up to The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
I would have been devastated.
Yeah.
I would have been so upset that I probably would have cried.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been awful for me.
Yeah.
But because I went in knowing that it was going to be so disappointing, I was able to, like, at least survive that experience without, like... Yeah, but, like, absolutely that's a fair comparison.
Yeah, see, that's... It's devastating to think about. Because I have... it's not only Avengers Endgame. I also have Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You have like at least 12 movies.
Yeah.
Out of the 20 that are really good.
And then those two together are phenomenal. Some of the best superhero movies ever made. And they are the bookend to this giant chapter. And you didn't get that. And when you say it like that, it's very sad.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
I think that... And you know, we talked about nerd hate.
Yeah.
It's hard for me not to hate the nerds who made such a stink
about
The Last Jedi. It's hard for me not to hate them because they ruined it.
They took it and ruined it. Nerd hate is when nerds hate.
Yeah.
Hating nerds is not necessarily nerd hate.
But I don't want anybody to hate anybody.
Sure.
I don't want to hate anybody.
I get it.
It is hard for me, though, because I know I deep down and I will just say it. Guys, I'm talking to you now. If you, listener, were one of the people who really hated The Last Jedi and were vocal about it. And
specifically,
jumped on the
and were vocal about it
and jumped on the social media bandwagon, it is actually your fault that Rise of Skywalker was bad.
Yeah.
It is actually your fault. And that is... And to be fair, it's Disney's fault because Disney should never have listened to them.
Totally.
Disney should never have because The Last Jedi was a spectacular critical and box office success. There was no reason to listen to the worst of the Star Wars fans or the worst aspect of the fandom. and to not to be ad hominem here, to listen to the worst arguments about The Last Jedi and then make decisions creatively about Rise of Skywalker based on those reactions.
Yeah, I agree.
There was no reason for them to do that. So the fact that they did that, and whether I don't know if it was Abrams just I don't know who I'm not going to assume that it was Abrams acting as like a creative with a creative blank check on that. I think that it was probably studio driven. Whoever it was, it was ultimately their fault, but it wouldn't have happened without all the bandwagoning. So all that said, it is one of the great cinematic tragedies. Rise of Skywalker is one of the great cinematic tragedies, and always will be, because you can't go back and do it again.
Yeah.
It's done.
Yeah.
It's been done. It is never going to be fixed.
So we gave you our top 10 with the glaring hole that should have been
Rise of Skywalker.
Can you imagine if Rise of Skywalker was what it was supposed to be, and you had Endgame and Rise of Skywalker
honestly,
in 1 year?
You're actually ruining my day right now.
I'm sorry.
I'll stop. I'm feeling lots of like very awful emotions. I would like not to end this episode on such a down note. What I want to say, because yes, I can imagine it should have been my top. At the very minimum, this year, Endgame should have been your number one, and it was.
Yeah.
Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Rise of Skywalker should have at the very minimum been on my top 10 or top 20, probably top 10, in a reasonable world where people weren't assholes on the internet, Rise of Skywalker probably would have been my number one.
Yeah.
If Rian Johnson had written and directed Rise of Skywalker, it would have been my number one of 2019. Instead, not even my top 20.
Yeah.
And that sucks. And I think, I say that, yes, it's very personally tragic, but I know that it's not just me. There's millions of fans who are just like me, who were robbed of the satisfying conclusion to one of the most important franchise sagas ever put to film. And Star Wars being one of the most influential films in all of cinema history. And we were robbed by jerks who didn't understand what's good. So that sucks.
It does suck.
It sucks, and it would be a crummy note to end on. So I'm not ending on that. What I'm going to end on is that it was really, really hard for me to pick a top 10.
Which is great.
Out of like 30 movies that I absolutely love this year.
Yeah. The fact that I saw 1917 and had the experience with it that I did.
Yeah.
And it's not my number one.
Yeah. And it's not like, based on anything.
It's, yeah.
And it's not an adaptation.
Yeah.
It's not a comic book movie.
Fully it's just, original.
It is what it is.
Like take away the accumulation of 10 years and 22 movies and several billion dollars in Endgame. And yeah, we would have had the same number one. 1917 was phenomenal. There's also apparently a ton of really good movies that I have not seen this year. Yeah. I got to get on it.
Well, you have a lot to look forward to, CJ.
Well, on that note, we are going to bring back it's going to be our second annual Oscar contest.
Yes.
So the Oscar nominations are going to land in a couple days.
Yeah.
When this lands, it'll be a couple days. And soon after, we will have our Oscar contest up, which is you go onto our website, nerdcriticpodcast.com, and you fill out your ballot of what you think is going to win. And then we watch the Oscars, and the person, there's a whole point system. If you win, then you get a giant prize pack that I don't know what's in it yet, but I'll let you know later.
We talked about at the top of the episode why this show is so hard to make, and what makes Nerd Critic such a difficult thing for us to do. It may sound like I'm saying that facetiously because like all we do is like sit and talk about movies, but like we take this really seriously.
Yeah.
We try to bring something valuable to the table every week and every weekend in 2019, almost every single weekend I went to see at least one movie, more than one a week. And often I was going to see a movie that I didn't want to see because our commitment to you, the listeners, and to this show is to see the biggest movie every week.
Yeah.
And the reason we do that is because the reason that it's the biggest movie every week is because it's probably the movie that the most people will have seen, which matters. It matters what movies people see. And so, and we're, like I said, we're not going to get into it, but I do want to introduce the thing, and we'll talk about it more in our Oscar conversations because it will be appropriate to talk about it then, that the biggest movies of the year are not the best movies of the year. And so there's actually a very large quality gap between the movies that most people see and the movies that are actually really, really good.
Yeah.
And that gap is just growing year over year. So our effort as a show, Nerd Critics Desire, and we've talked about our mission many, many times, so we don't need to like rehash it, but that is why we're doing this. We're doing this because we see this growing gap, and we want to say, hey, if you're going to be the likelihood that you went and saw Hellboy over Parasite, right?
Yeah.
It, like, so let's talk about Hellboy. Let's talk about why it was bad. And if it was, and why you maybe didn't have a good experience,
yeah.
And you paid some money, and if you have a family, you paid a lot of money to go see a movie that you didn't like and that was a bad experience, let's talk about why. And then maybe eventually the people who listen to this podcast will start making different decisions about what they go see. Or I don't know. But that's.
Yeah, it makes, the wider that gap becomes, the more difficult it is on us. But the goal is of this podcast to make that gap smaller.
Yeah.
For whoever we can.
Yeah.
We have a great time doing this podcast.
It's a lot of fun. We wouldn't do it if we didn't
love
it.
Yeah. We wouldn't have, we're coming up on 2 years of doing this podcast, and we wouldn't do it if we didn't love it. But it is very difficult. Life is very busy, and to make sure that you see, and like, especially through, there's specific months, like we had some runs that it was 5 or 6 movies in a row that were just bad, but we had to take the time to go see. Anyway, we'll talk about it a little bit later. This is a long episode.
Yeah.
But just know that the Oscar conversation is coming up. The Oscar conversation kind of switches from big blockbuster movies to all these other movies that everyone should be paying attention to that they might not have heard of, that we're hoping we can bring to light and convince you guys to go see.
And if you haven't seen some of the movies that we've mentioned in our top 10, you should go see them.
You should.
Really, really, really.
And
you will be so grateful.
We'll make sure to post them. We'll make sure to in the episode notes and on our website you can see what our top 10 is. And we'll do top 20 for Jordan.
Because the gap thank you.
Yeah.
The gap between the big movies and the good movies gets bigger and bigger every year, but also more and more really good movies come out every year. It's not that good movies are going away.
Yeah.
And that is really beautiful and encouraging.
I also do think that if we can get more Taika Waititis and Ryan Johnsons out there that make a small movie that's fantastic, and if enough people go see it. And
Greta freaking Gerwig, who I can't wait to see what she does next.
They'll get the opportunity to make a big movie, and all of a sudden you have Thor Ragnarok or Knives Out.
Yeah,
it's a larger movie with its quality because of the directors. So
absolutely. Well, this was a lot of fun, CJ.
We ended on a hopeful level, right?
Yeah. No, yeah. I feel
okay. Feel all right.
All those sad, awful feelings are receding into the back of my mind where they belong.
Into the depths
of my subconscious where they give me sad dreams. And I'm feeling great right now.
Good. I'm glad.
So, thank you all for listening. Thank you for joining us again in 2020.
Yeah.
We are really looking forward to another wonderful year of being nerds and critics. And, it would just, you know, we just are so happy to have you guys along for the ride.
Apparently you guys are going to be called Nerd Critics. I was at home visiting people, and I had some friends come visit me. And so it was me and two of my buddies sitting at a table, and my niece comes up, my little niece, and she asks if the other two are nerd critics as well. And I was like, you know what? Because they both listen.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? Yeah, they are nerd critics.
If you listen to this podcast,
you are a nerd critic.
You are a nerd critic.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
There it is. That's your stamp. That's your title for all of 2020.
Maybe you're a resident nerd in your neighborhood. Maybe you're a studied and credentialed critic. But for sure, you are a nerd critic.
And thank you, Michael Bonmiller, because I'm sure you're a nerd critic.
Oh, he is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you for the wonderful music.
Yes.
That we will use for another year.
Another year at least.
At least.
There's some new stuff coming from Michael too.
Nice.
I was speaking with him. We're gonna be having some new music. It's gonna be pretty great.
Excited.
As always and forever, this year, last year, next year, please remember to love movies like a nerd and respect them like a critic.
And cut.